following conscious. You may know a lot of them, never think that you got this. Wise words, pay attention to these wise words. And people follow people, but seldom following dreams. They tend to follow dreams, but never know what they mean. These are wise words, pay attention to these wise words.
All right, we're here back on another. This is season two of Wise Words, the relaunch. We got Jonathan Stone here with us. That's what it's Whitey Pines.
At Fountain Square Emporium.
Yes, sir.
Come. Square at Bowling Green.
916. We're at 916 State Street. Come down here and shop with them. They got a pretty cool storefront.
They got anything you want. If he ain't got it, he'll go get it.
Hell, I was playing piano.
Yeah, he was telling me about that when he got called. I didn't know you could play piano.
I don't read music. I played by ear since I was three.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, this place is awesome. Yeah. It's a treasure trove.
It is. Not a lot of people know about it. That's why we snuck in the back.
There you go.
Especially for 80s babies. I mean, they got all kind of stuff out front. But, you know, just collectibles, memorabilia.
That's for sure. Hey, man, but. I appreciate you hitting me up and coming on the show or whatnot, man. I think we got a lot to talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm excited.
But tell us a little bit about your background, man. You know, what it was like growing up.
Man, so it's kind of weird being in the situation because I had a podcast a long time ago.
Yeah.
And the guys that were doing it, still some of my best friends in the world, but their production company just went crazy busy. Mm-hmm. So I've always been the host of a podcast. It's kind of different. Wow. You're asking me questions, you know what I mean? So I don't know where to start.
So hard to start with, what's your name? What do you do?
I'm Jonathan Stone. I'm a licensed real estate agent with EXP Realty. So licensure through the state of Kentucky, but our brokerage is worldwide.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's different. You know, most people, brokerages for real estate are brick and mortar in a micro community. So Bowling Green, you know, you got your franchises for each Bowling Green spot. And your Bowling Green location will differ from what's in Glasgow or what's different in Nashville, Tennessee. So one of the cool things about ours is being a cloud brokerage, not brick and mortar at all. It's not a franchise. It's global.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's other ones aren't like that for the most part.
Sure, I think there's a handful of other ones that have come across and tried to recreate the concept, but
this is the first one to kind of break the trend.
And
explain the difference, what you're saying.
So a brick and mortar location, like any storefront, there's a secretary at a desk, there's a broker in the office, there's agents in cubicles. So what EXP does differently is that our broker is statewide. We don't have secretaries. We don't have people that are pushing papers. We encourage our agents, if they want to go and get their own brick and mortar location, that's fine. But like me, my office is at Q, you know, and Everybody knows, if you know Bowling Green and you know me, you know I love Q.
Right.
Q Coffee, they got two locations now, so I just throw my laptop there and kind of hang out.
Well, that's the beautiful thing with the new dynamics in the workplace is the freedom, you know, especially after COVID, everybody's doing the Zooms, and a lot of people didn't go back to the workplace after that.
Everybody's trying to figure out how to work from home.
Yeah, I think
that's like you. I mean, you're not working from home. You're out there in the community.
I could be at home if I chose to, but there's two things to that. So brick and mortar, especially with real estate agents, I had a mentor and a coach tell me, not too long ago, I was asking them, you know, should you be at the office? Should you be at home? Or should you be out in the public? And he said, Jonathan, is anybody in your office ever going to buy a house from you? And I said, well, hell no. Right. Of course they're not going to. They're going to buy a house through themselves, of course. So then I got to thinking, well, I'm not going to have live communication if I'm at home all day. It's going to be whatever communication comes my way, cell phone, email, Zoom. If I'm out in the community, you know, I had a hour-long conversation with a buddy today that I reconnected with, and two teachers that were my high school teachers, and you know, I've known them forever.
Just out in public networking.
I mean, you know it.
It's the same way. Like, I get calls all the time, and people's like, well, it doesn't sound like you're at the office, or, you know. I think that's what they expect, like the call center chatter or something like that. And it's like, it just, you know, it doesn't make sense for me to be anywhere. You know, I'll answer my phone if I'm walking through Walmart and put a sale in, you know.
Absolutely.
It's
beautiful that COVID kind of taught us that. But at the same time, it's like there's also this mentality of like, I'm never going back. And I think that can be detrimental to a lot of businesses as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were quite a few major companies that have started asking people to come back to the office, and it's not going so well with those people being asked to come back.
Well, there's the workplace culture, though, I think, that suffers from it, you know.
Yeah.
And plus the camaraderie and the competition, maybe, especially like in your field or my field, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you can work out from home, but like it's something about going to the gym. And
which I do. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just to get, that's where you go to do that. That thing, whatever that thing may be.
I think you get, for me, I don't know about you guys, but if I'm at home and first off, I'm not going to work out at home. Mm-hmm. I can try all I want, but if I'm working out or working my business at home, I see laundry. I'm like, I better knock that out real quick. I see some dishes. Mm-hmm. I better knock that out real quick. The dog's got to go out. Better take him out real quick. You know, it's like you can't fully commit to the work that you should be doing because there's so many other things that you know you could also accomplish.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what business owners were worried about, trying to get people back into the office or into some sort of office space, because it's, you can control the people a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe control them isn't really the right
word. Well, I know you're right, but and they know where their money's going. Like, yeah. If they're paying you and you're working home, I guess in the back of their minds, like, what's he doing? You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's probably not working.
Right.
So, you know, I'll tell you what, let's back up a little bit. We'll kind of get back into the real estate because I got some questions I want to ask you about that. But you're from Bowling Green?
I'm from Clarksville, Tennessee.
Okay.
I was born in Nashville and I was adopted at 2 days old.
Okay.
I've never really talked about this in a public forum. A lot of people, you know, my general circle knows that the two teachers that I met today, I mean, we had running jokes when I was in high school about them picking on me for being adopted. It was all well and good. Nothing horrible or anything.
Back then, nowadays, it'd be a whole different story.
Safe spaces and stuff. But no, I was 2 days old through a church. It's closed adoption. I don't know nothing. You know, never will know anything. Never would know anything. But my parents are who my parents are.
Yeah.
My adopted parents, they lived.
Have you ever wondered?
Oh, yeah. How could you not?
That was a stupid question. Have you ever thought about going out and trying to find out? Like,
I think everybody that has a close adoption probably thinks that at some point in their life. And it took me a long time to kind of get over that hump. It's a weird thing to hear your entire life. Your parents loved you so much that they put you up for adoption so you could have a better life. And it's like, I have a daughter now. There's nothing on this planet that would make me love her so much that I wouldn't want to be around her all the time.
Like, you might could have understood that before you had a kid.
I think I, yeah.
Well, yeah, and the difference is they're basically dropping you and then walking away, whereas, you know, you can adopt somebody and then they could keep tabs on you or whatever, or get their self in a better position to come back around, or
fostering or open adoption situations. Yeah, closed adoption is yeah, it's pretty, there's a hard line in the sand, you know.
No, you know, but what you could do is you could do that ancestry, spit in that little vial, and they will tell you if you got brothers and sisters, if you got cousins anywhere in the world.
I don't know now that I'd want to know.
Right.
You know, it would probably, I don't know, probably freak me out a little bit. What if it's a crazy person? What if I'm the crazy person?
I know, in particular, I know a girl that did that, and she got reunited with her brother in Florida.
Damn. Mm. I just hope it's like somebody cool.
But it is awkward for her, and she'll tell you, it is awkward, but she, you know, she's went down there and visited them and stuff, and they've tried to kind of, you know, but it's like, I'm sure it is an elephant in the room, and, you know, like, how do we do this?
I don't know, man. Like, my family's my family. You know, my adopted parents, I don't think I could have gotten much better. And then I've got a younger brother, so mom and dad couldn't have kids.
Yeah.
Adopted me. Lo and behold, pregnant with my brother Daniel. Happens so often. The stress is gone. The attempt, you know.
the heartbreak of not being able to get a baby, not being able to get a baby. And then you get a baby, and then it's like pregnant.
That's wild.
But yeah, Daniel came along. I was about 2 years old when he was born, and that's our dynamic: two parents, two kids.
That's awesome.
But grew up in Clarksville. Moved here. Are y'all from Bowling Green?
Logan County. All of us, actually.
So y'all remember the hailstorm?
Yeah.
Yeah, we moved here just right after the hailstorm.
So what? I mean, you still in school? I mean,
I was 9, 10 years old.
So you went to school around here?
Cumberland Trace. The old Cumberland Trace, right before they built this new one. So old Cumberland Trace Elementary, and then they built Briarwood, which is where we lived. And it was like growing up. My life was so, I think I got the last of the golden years, you know what I mean? Our friend group could walk to school.
Right.
We could ride our bikes to school. Our dog at the time, I'm not kidding, my aunt taught at the school, my brother was in my aunt's class, and our dog would walk with us to school, and he would sit outside of the window of her classroom where Daniel was.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's like the 70s and 80s, man. It was awesome.
I do agree, though. Like, that was like the end of our era. You know, like, we're the only generation that like grew up without social media and got to witness it at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah.
And things just aren't the same anymore.
No. And take that with what you will. I mean, there's some great things about social media, and there's some absolutely terrible things about social media. But, you know, when we grew up... I mean, we really had the rule: street lights come on, you go home for dinner.
Yeah, they didn't know where you was all day. They couldn't pick up the phone.
You rarely had to call your friend's house and talk to their parents for like 30 seconds. Yeah. It's so awkward.
And ask for them.
Yeah.
Hey, I had a pager. Like,
no.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you did too. If we're going to age ourselves, I'm from the era where we had a pager. I had to walk back.
Pay phones, man. Pager would go off. You hit the pay phone. They had one at Pizza Hut, and you had one out there where it used to be a Citgo.
On Scottsville Road?
No, we're talking about old Russellville store.
Okay.
Yeah.
Spencer knows.
I know that drive to Russellville. You know, Clarksville to Russellville. That's how you get there.
Yeah, right.
And we would frequent Bowling Green every other weekend, you know. It seemed like it was probably less than that. But, dude, I tell people it's the worst drive.
So, being that you grew up here and knowing how much Bowling Green's grew, what's some of the things that you miss about the old
Before we get to what does suck about that drive, though? Because I hate that drive, too.
If you get on the other side of Russellville, it's just a two-lane road.
All the way to Clarksville.
All the way to Clarksville. And then, we were talking about Spencer earlier, then you run into Wilma Rudolph, which is 6 lanes of traffic. There's just no fast way to get to Clarksville.
No.
There's no fun way to get to Clarksville. It's just...
Fields.
Yeah. And it's not even pretty.
And then, you know.
I mean, if you're going to Clarksville, the majority of the right side is just barren. It sucks.
Do you go back to Clarksville much now?
No. I mean,
no
enough.
No. I ain't been to Clarksville. Couldn't tell you.
I like going. We have some friends, my kids' godparents, they're from Clarksville as well. I mean, tiny world, right?
Uh-huh.
And we didn't even meet them until... We all grew up and we're friends now, but so we know some of the same places. We like going back to eat or have an event or something.
I don't know if it's just me, but the Clarksville traffic is a bitch, man. Why though? You know what I mean? Like,
well, people tell you that about Bowling Green.
But, I mean, I drive in Bowling Green more than Clarksville. I can handle Bowling Green. Clarksville just like infuriates me though.
It's because there's no. If you got to cross 5 lanes of traffic to get anywhere on Wilma Rudolph, you know, their downtown is a little bit more spread out, a little bit bigger. You got the waterfront and all that, and it's just 2 lanes, but it's just different.
It is.
But Bowling Green, so you asked, like, what has grown about Bowling Green?
Well, what do you miss about the old Bowling Green? Like a restaurant, you know what I'm saying? Like a club?
Well, I was too young to remember very many. I remember, like, Good Times by my grandparents' house. I never even went to Good Times, but I remember, like, the volleyball court stuff in the back and all that.
Well, man, back in the day, it was like an under 18 club at one time.
It was called Cooler.
Coolers.
Yep.
And we was all going up there.
It was under 18?
18 to 21.
Yeah. No, we was in high school, though. It was under 18. Yeah,
you're probably snaking it.
No.
Yeah, he's right. It was, you're right. It was called the Cooler, though.
And Owensboro had one, too. Like, it, you don't have Rockefeller.
Yeah. Owensboro had Rockefellers. I thought about that today.
Yeah.
Rockefellers.
But like, there ain't no clubs like that no more.
No. And what you couldn't, there's too many lawyers in this world that would eat that alive.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that. But man, I don't know. What do I miss? I miss not the original mall. Right. But I liked the old mall. My first job was Chick-fil-A in Greenwood Mall. And
Aladdin's Castle right,
Aladdin's Castle right next to it, dude. When Sbarro Pizza was still good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I miss... I grew up playing sports. Audie Golf was fun. Yeah, we had a legit driving range. Now we got Hobson, and I think it's us going, you know, I hate to crap on something that they built for the community, but it's just...
I've never been there.
But Audie was popping, man. They had the driving course or the driving race. They had the mini golf course, and then they had the batting cages.
Batting cages, I remember.
And it was fun. I mean, you get a couple of guys.
Some dates and stuff like that.
It was different.
Yeah.
Then again, it was a little further. That was well before that side of Scottsboro Road got developed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was Greenwood High
School. Apartments over there.
Yeah.
Audie Court.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's just apartments, which seems like it's going up left and right every minute. I miss, man, y'all remember the Dollar Theater.
Oh, yeah.
The Dollar Theater was cool. For somebody like
Gangland, me, it's
into
the yes. old mall. What did the
no,
old
it was
mall?
It was over here off Fairview.
Yeah, by Gangland.
Yeah, Gaddy's. That now that's they, probably what I miss the most.
Didn't that used to be an old, some type of old strip mall or something in there?
Oh, don't give me
that. And had a water fountain or whatever.
No, that's the mall. That's the mall that's over Campbell off Lane. Campbell Lane.
Yeah.
The old boat, the wishing fountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the boat is still there. It's, you know, they dressed up. It's a little different.
Remember Beijing?
Dude, I said Gaddy's. I think Beijing is what I miss the most. Every time we name something, I'm like, no, that's what I miss the most.
It had a little fish or whatever.
Oh, did the koi pond? Yeah. Yeah. And then after like X amount of years, like the water was just not there. It was just gross. It's just still water sitting there. It's gross. But yeah, oh, dude, that was fun. I don't know that I miss specific things as much as I miss like the friend group and the things that we did and the things that we could do. Like, riding our bikes, and we would ride our bikes up to Taco Bell. We lived in Briarwood, so we ride our bikes up to Taco Bell, throw our golf clubs on our backpacks and then or on our backs and ride golf clubs up to Covington and play golf. Or it was just different, man. I don't know. I don't think you could do that with kids now. You got to keep tabs on everybody, and it's a different world. Don't get me wrong, but
for sure,
we grew up in, like I said, a golden era of being able to do all of that. And I really think that we, at least me and my friends, we really took advantage of it. And I liked it.
No doubt. Yeah, I like the, you know, reminisce and this nostalgia of it all. Now, you said you worked at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
But fill in the gaps a little bit between that, and you said it was your first job, and now you're really good. Fill in the gaps and tell us a little bit about what all you've done.
So, Chick-fil-A...
I mean, you got to touch them all, but you know, the highlights of it.
So I love the restaurant industry. That's, I fell in love with Chick-fil-A. Well, I shouldn't say Chick-fil-A, the company. I fell in love with people and hanging out with people. And I've always liked that. Mm-hmm. And Chick-fil-A is probably the best company to teach people how to deal with people. You know, just the thank you, my pleasure. The efficiency. You know?
So they do like a specific training for their employees?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You have to sit and watch.
You know. So it ain't like Burger King. They don't just give you like a little hat or whatever.
Dude, I feel like I could go into Burger King right now and just be like, hey, I want to flip burgers. And they're like, okay, come on.
Right.
Chick-fil-A, they're going to vet their people a little bit.
Huh.
And it was great, man. I learned a whole lot. But I, like I said, I fell in love with the food industry. So then, you know, that was my first job. Started getting real involved into theater and stuff in school, but got my license, needed another job, needed insurance, all that. So I started at Brewster's Ice Cream on Scottsville Road. And that's when, if y'all are from Bowling Green, Stuart Kirby and Nikki were the owners from J.C. Kirby and Son Funeral Chapel.
Yeah.
So Kevin's son, Stuart. And Stuart is like a mentor to me still. I mean, we have conversation pretty often. For people that don't see each other very often, we talk enough. I just messaged Nikki the other day. She had a recipe online, and I was like, I need this. So we still stay in contact. Stuart taught me the most about running businesses.
Okay.
Just how to be effective, how to deal with people, how to deal with pissed off customers.
Yeah.
how to deal with managing people, your employees, and then how to deal with managing customers. Because a lot of times, you know, people may know that they want ice cream, but you got to guide them to get there. You know, do you want a banana split? Do you want a cake cone? Do you want a sugar cone? Like,
you got questions to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then from there, I was old enough to serve and bartend, so I got a job at Shogun.
Okay.
That's when they opened the Shogun Bistro. It was a couple months after they opened. And that's when I got my first taste of serving, making tips, and bartending. And, dude, when I tell you, that was a different ballgame for me. When I realized that I could bullshit with people for an hour while they're eating sushi, it was game over. And then I'd make good money, and I'd walk out of there with cash? Bro, stop. I mean, I wish you could do that at 15. Right. You know what I mean? And so I worked the hibachi side for a little bit and then moved over to the bistro side, which is like the sushi bar and all that. And I would expedite my tables. Like, they had the old dry erase pen or menus or whatever. And I would bring in these expo pens, like the dry erase markers, and give them to my customers. And I could handle like 5-6 tables at a time because I'd hand them the pens, be like, just circle the sushi rolls that you want. And then I'll come back and pick them up. Enter all of it in.
So is that some of the efficiency that you learned from Brewster's?
Absolutely. Yeah, Stuart always had a saying, work smarter, not harder. Okay. And I took that to heart.
I mean, I really think that I took that to heart. Yeah. It was more about, for me, the, like you said, the efficiency. And still, if I could accomplish that really well, I could still give really, really good customer service. So then from Shogun, there was only so much you could do.
You're starving by the time
you get. Well, wait till you get to this one. So then you get to, from Shogun, I made the jump to Longhorn, which is, you know, a high-end steakhouse. I mean, it's franchise. I wouldn't, it ain't no Ruth's Chris or nothing, but it's a high-end steakhouse for Bowling Green.
For Bowling Green, yeah.
Oh, dude, it's about as good as you can get. And that was fun. I met my wife there, met a lot of good people, and met the best clientele there. That was where I really think I solidified, like, I know how I'm going to make money in this world with how I treat people and how I can help people. And I think Longhorn taught me that the most.
Gotcha.
Because I had more responsibility. I had more of an active role as a trainer. I wasn't quite a manager. I was a trainer for other servers that would come in.
Well, I mean, if you're dealing with people on the customer end, you know, it's just a common evolution to deal with people, you know, to train people is what I'm trying to get at.
It goes hand in hand.
Transition, yeah.
I think the problem with most people is that they don't want to take on the responsibility of training somebody else because they don't feel confident enough in their own.
But you learn so much. I've seen, like, training other people teaches me more. You know what I'm saying? Like, because you kind of hone in on what it is that you actually know. And once you go to train somebody, you actually realize, hey, I know a whole lot more than I give myself credit for.
There's a level of mastering something, and then there's a level of mastering it to a point to where you can teach it.
Right.
And teach it well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I found myself.
Don't you think some people have more of a knack for teaching than other people do, right?
I don't know if I had a passion for teaching as much as I had a passion for seeing other people see the potential and what they could do as well. Yeah, maybe that is teaching, but it doesn't have to
be. Which I think that's where I was getting at, is there's certain qualities that make good teachers that people either, some people just have it, or other people have to learn it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's probably a hard thing to teach.
Yeah.
Awkwardly enough.
What is your thought on, you know, people trying to teach something or coach something that they haven't actually done? You feel like?
I think it's probably the dumbest thing you can do.
I like that. I was just wanting your input on it.
I mean, if I want to learn how to shoot a basketball, mm-hmm. I'm going to Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Steph Curry.
Right.
If I want to learn how to hit a golf ball, I'm going to Tiger Woods.
Somebody that's done it and proven it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Why would you teach it if you can't do it?
There's probably a level of understand that, you know, the naked eye may see something a little differently, but I would, for me, somebody that expects a lot of myself, I wouldn't do that. I would seek somebody great at something to teach me to elevate myself.
They say that's the best way to compress time, find somebody doing what you want to do.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
I mean, it's just like if somebody wrote a book, you know, if you read that book, you learn their mistakes and you don't have to go make them or whatnot. So you eliminate that learning. You know, I'm not saying that you're going to get off from a book, but if you go to somebody that's already went through the things that you want to accomplish, you know, you can speed that process up.
Well, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. I've never even thought about it that way, but it does make perfect sense.
Yeah, just a little bit of wise words for everybody. You
know? Oh, look, full circle. So then from serving at Longhorn, met my wife, you know, not married at the time, and I did not want to serve and bartend on Fridays and Saturdays when I wanted to have a kid or kids. And
that's the money time, so.
And so I thought, what's the next best thing I can do? And real estate kind of happened. But in that meantime was when I actually got into acting even heavier.
Yes, I want to hear about this. So
I grew up, this story is wild. I grew up on stage. I mean, right down here at the Capitol. And then at Greenwood High School, we did one production at Greenwood. But when I say I grew up on stage, like that's, if you had known me at 10, 11, 12 years old, that you knew that was all I wanted to do. 15, 16, 17, 18.
When did you get involved in like acting and like, hey, this is.
I saw Phantom of the Opera in Nashville when I was, my mom could tell you, I think I was probably.
So you're, I guess, what they would call a purist. You ain't somebody that just watched a movie and was like, man, I want to be a movie star. You actually watched a theater. Like, that's kind of your.
Well, thing. Two takeaways. I saw the theater thing first. I mean, everybody had seen movies. I was 6, 7 years old, so I'd seen movies, but yeah. nothing caught me the way Phantom of the Opera did. And I memorized the entire show. I mean, the entire show. Mm. To a T. I had the mask. I had the K. I could act it all out to a T.
So which one was it?
Phantom.
Yeah, but so you watched the play?
Yeah.
Because that's the old horror movies. You know?
No. So I saw the musical, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera at TPAC. And became obsessed. I'm talking obsessed. And that's another thing you'll figure out is this level of dedication I had to these kinds of things. And I got fixated on it and just grew up on the stage and did some productions at Capitol. And when I really took off, I would say, was probably in sixth grade. And I was watching, this is where the movie thing comes in. I was watching The Jacksons in American Dream. You ever seen it? It's like the mock documentary of Michael Jackson growing up. And,
well, but it sounds interesting.
Well, that came out, and I guess I was kind of watching that, and I knew who Michael Jackson was from the Jackson 5. You know, I want
I
you back.
I know what you're talking about, man.
ABC, yeah. I'll be there. And then that same year was the year that Michael Jackson had his big reunion in 2001, like the 30th anniversary of Thriller. I don't know, 20th anniversary of Thriller, I guess. And I did not realize, this tells you how young I was. I did not realize that old white man was the same as a young black boy of Michael Jackson. I didn't think that was, I didn't know they were the same person. So I asked my mom, like, why are they singing the Jackson 5 songs? My mom's probably thinking, you're an idiot. That's Michael Jackson. And then I saw him do Billie Jean. I'd never even heard the song. You know, the bass thump, the doo 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 doo. And I looked at my mom. I can vividly remember this. I looked at my mom standing in the kitchen. You know, we had like a not an open house, but we had like a living room and a kitchen, and there was like this little spot right in the middle. I was standing right there and I said, I can do that. And she looked at me like I was crazy. Like, Michael Jackson been doing that for 30 years, honey. You're not going to do that. And I saw him do the moonwalk and I was like, I can do that. And I just watched and got fixated on it and became a Michael Jackson impressionist.
No, sir. You have videos. Is there room for that? Yeah. All right, I'm going to have to get that.
I'll show you. I'm not doing any other here, but it's been a while.
That was my next question.
It's been a while, but I became obsessed, and that's another thing. My heroes were these exceptional people. Michael Jackson, a perfectionist. Michael Jordan, a perfectionist. Kobe Bryant, a perfectionist. These people that I aspired to be or to model things after were, I never wanted to pick somebody who was just middle of the road. You know, that wasn't enough for me. It needed to be a star.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got into theater through, I guess I was in eighth grade. My teacher, Debbie Lanham, one of the best people ever, she was doing talent shows or whatever. And I'd been bullied for years about acting and dancing and singing and all that. And so in eighth grade, she asked me to do the talent show. I did the one in seventh grade, no problem. I didn't have any shame. And then finally in eighth grade, I was like, I don't know if this is for me anymore. You know, I'm getting picked on a lot. I don't know if I want to do it. And I stood her up, and she called my, I'm pretty sure she called my dad. She's like, where's Jonathan? The talent show is tonight. And my dad picked me. I was at a friend's house just playing basketball, trying to fit in with the guys, you know. And he comes and picks me up, and he was like, are you going to this talent show tonight? I was like, Dad, I don't want to do it. You know, I've just been picked on. It's not fun anymore. It's lame, you know?
Because I was told it was lame.
Well, because I was told it was lame. Yeah. That's the language I was using to describe. And he told me, it's like, you told her you were going to do this. You need to do it.
Mm.
We drove out to Drake's Creek Middle School, and I did the routine or whatever.
Is it half-heartedly, or did you actually go show out?
I was never going to do anything half-heartedly.
I knew that was coming.
I was never going to do it half-heartedly. When I got on that stage, and those people knew what was coming, because they had seen it the year before, and they knew as soon as that bass, I did Billie Jean, as soon as that bass started thumping, they were like, Jonathan's about to do Billie Jean. And a couple months later, I guess, Debbie asked me if I wanted to be in the musical at Greenwood, and it was Singing in the Rain. Dude, I didn't. I thought Phantom of the Opera was the only musical that ever existed. You know, and
you got Cats.
Yeah, oh God! And Phantom of the Opera is about as classic as I like. Everything else before that is just, oh God, it bores me to tears. So they asked me to be in Singing in the Rain and play a younger version of one of the lead roles. And the two teachers I saw today, they were the directors.
Well, that's kind of ironic, isn't
it? I know, right? And so, I don't know what happened, man. Something switched for me. I was like, I don't really care what any of these people are saying. It hurt my feelings. It bugged me that they still talked about it and dogged me for it or whatever. But I just had this obsession at that point. And getting on that stage and hearing people clap and hearing people cheer. I went on to do five shows for Greenwood.
What would you tell a kid watching this that, you know, is going through a similar thing where there's something that they want to pursue, but like...
If this is for kids, I mean, how blunt can I be?
Well, you know, I mean, anybody really, but, you know, the lesson to be learned from this.
My dad taught me to say, fuck it.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm sorry that that's blunt. I'm sorry that that's probably abusive language. But
well, let's be honest. Ain't no kids probably watching this. But
the reason he said it was because it was the only thing that was going to get me through it.
If there's a kid watching this, then it's okay for them to hear that.
There's a lesson to be learned there. You know, words are just words. It's the only word that I can use to describe the situation. I mean that. You have to love something so much that you don't care anymore. Yeah, you have to have a driving passion for something. And if you have that, you've got something that a lot of people don't.
Right.
And that's what I would say. It does not matter what they think or what they do. Do what you love, as long as it's healthy for you.
Yeah, right.
And do it 100%. Do it with all of your heart. Dude, I'm telling you, it was rough for a little while. And my mom, I would be in tears because I'm like, I can play basketball with these guys and they just pick on me and pick on me and pick on me. And my mom was just like, honey, this is just, it's just a chapter. Mm-hmm. It's just a very short chapter in a very long book. And that's kind of what you have to take away from that. And it's not just bullying. It's anything in life. These little chapters are just pieces to this really long book. Some people's books are longer than others. Some people's chapters are longer than others. But if you can think that way, if you can get through this chapter, the next thing's coming. And the next thing might be great. And my next thing was really great. So what happened, my dad and I started watching the TV show Smallville. I don't know if y'all know anything about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know Smallville?
Yeah.
So you know the guy that played Lex Luthor?
I don't know him, but I know the show you're talking about.
The guy that played Lex Luthor went to Western. Michael Rosenbaum.
Wow. Didn't I know that.
Michael went to Western for theater. So when I was at Greenwood, I auditioned for this thing called GSA, which is Governor's School for the Arts. It's like the arts and humanities version of Governor's Scholar Program, which is like the science, math, English, the smart people thing, you know. And I auditioned for GSA and got in. I was the only one in Warren County that got in. And I went and did musical theater up for GSA at GSA and got an offer to do musical theater at WKU. Michael Rosenbaum went to Western for the same program that I was in. And down the road, I got to meet him. And my dad and I had been fans of Smallville. But I guess it came out in 2004, so I was a freshman in high school. And I could relate to Clark Kent pretty good, being adopted, not knowing anything, going through those awkward stages. But there was something, and if Michael Rosenbaum ever watches this, and I'll send it to him, I'll just be like, you need to listen to this, timestamp it or something. There was something about Michael Rosenbaum's performance as Lex Luthor that was absolutely awe-inspiring. He played the best Lex Luthor to a T. There's nothing I would change about his performance. He was perfect. He was probably my dad's favorite character on the show. And so we love the show. We love Michael. I get to meet him years later. And he was already off Smallville at this point. And we meet at a bar in Evansville. He's from Newburgh, Indiana. So, you know, not far, other side of Owensboro.
Yeah.
We meet at a bar in Evansville. And I start telling him kind of my story, like I'm telling you guys now. And he says, I'm writing, directing, and starring in my own movie. Give me your email and I'll be in touch. And he's drinking vodka cranberries, whatever it was he's drinking at the time. I was drinking at the time. I probably had a couple beers myself. And I'm sitting there thinking, bullshit.
Never gonna happen.
This guy's being nice. I guess it was 3 months later about, and I get an email from this weird email address at like 5 a.m. It's Rosenbaum. Can you send me a couple headshots? And I guess I woke up a little bit. I mean, iPhones were out at the time, and I guess I got it on my iPhone. And I got the email, ran it, told my dad. I was like, something weird is happening. This is from Rosenbaum. This has to be real, right? There's nobody that would fake this.
They wouldn't even know to fake it.
Wouldn't even know to fake it.
All right.
So we send it. I go, my brother's working with this guy that does photography. I've never had a professional headshot in my life. I meet this kid I've never met. A couple hours later, get some headshots made at Covington Park. Send it. He edits them in hours and sends them to me, and I email Rosenbaum back. And he says something along the lines of, these are great. I'll pass along this information to the casting director and let you know. About a month goes by. And he says, hey, casting director thinks you're going to be a good fit. Can you read this script and send it to me? So I go to my old high school director, and I was like, this is one line, but it has to be the best line I've ever delivered in my life. And she's like, what are you talking about? I said, I've got a movie audition. And we sat and worked on this one line for an hour, just one line. You know, it used to take me an hour to memorize my whole script. That's just how it was. And we send the video off. I think my dad even bought like one of those little video camcorder, like the little mini ones, so we could get it edited or whatever. We send it off. And a couple months later or a month later or something, he emails me that he wants to meet me and potentially give me the role. Wants to meet with the guy that I'm going to be playing.
What is the role?
So, well, it's going to get even weirder.
Do you know that much about it so far?
Not yet.
Just from the line that you...
No, I don't know anything at this point. But this, I'm telling you, when this story is once in a million, it's going to blow your mind. So I go up there, my dad and I go, and my dad has never met a star in his life, and we're hanging out with Rosenbaum. My dad calls him Mr. Rosenbaum. My dad's 25 years older than this guy. He was Mr. Rosenbaum. Like, it was so wild. So the makeup artist and hair artist, Jennifer Bruns, she's still up in Newburgh as well, and Jenny. And she's like looking at my hair, and they already cast the guy that I'm going to be playing the younger version of. I find that out that day. And they colored my hair a little bit, darkened it up a little. I guess Rosenbaum wanted me after our conversation. And he was like, we got to darken his hair. We got to change a couple things about his hair. No big deal. I'm fine with it. They officially offered me the part. I guess it was that afternoon. We went to the casting director's spot, hung out with Rosenbaum for a little bit. And a couple months later, I drove up to Newburgh, Indiana, where they were filming, and filmed my scenes. And I met at the red carpet event, I met this guy, Kent Brenneman. My character's name in the movie is Lynn Brenneman. Rosenbaum's movie is about all his friends coming back home. It was like paying homage to Newburgh, kind of like what I would love to do in Bowling Green. I would love to do it, I just don't have the resources. Right. So I play this guy named Lynn Brenneman, and I meet the character he's based off of, Kent Brenneman.
Yeah.
Hold up. Kent Brenneman is a real estate agent with EXP and recruited me to get into real estate with EXP.
And you was playing like him in the show. And
I had no idea.
Wow.
I'm telling you.
So that's how you got into real estate.
That's how Kent was kind of the one that opened the door. It was years prior.
So do you look like him?
I look more like the actor that I played the younger version of than Kent. Yeah, I don't really look like Kent.
I was just curious.
But it was, dude, I'm telling you, it's just the wildest story.
That is pretty freaking crazy.
And now we're essentially business partners in how we operate.
Wow. So what's the movie?
It's called Back in the Day. I think it is on Amazon. Yeah. It was on Netflix for a while. It was released in theaters. My parents and my brother were invited to come to the red carpet. It was so surreal. Both my grandparents on my mom's side were alive at the time. And while I didn't want them to see the movie because there's a couple of inappropriate things, they were at least there to support. You know, awesome. My family all knew. And dude, it was just...
So is this an R-rated movie? This ain't an R-rated movie, right?
It is. It's probably... There's a little bit of nudity in it.
Okay. Is it you?
No. Okay. But, all right, so some of the other cast members, you know Harlan Williams, the cop that drinks the pee in Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah.
He's in it. Isaiah Mustafa, who's the Old Spice guy that's not Terry Crews. The guy that's like on the horse, like, ladies, look at your man.
That dude, the cop dude is... He's got some funny parts in a lot of movies. Like
he steals the show.
There's something about Mary. He's the hitchhiker, right, that he picks up.
Yeah.
The dude's
well, I like when he's on Dumb and Dumber and he's drinking Grandpa's old cop syrup or something, and it's pee.
And he starts twitching whenever he takes it.
He's so funny. And Nick Swartzen's in the movie. So I got to hang out with a couple of those guys. It was.
How long ago was this?
Oh, dude, probably 2013, 2014. And then, you know, post-production, it took a while for it to get out. I certainly did not look the same. My hair grown back out. The color was a little more natural again at that point, but
a lot of first time on that, because you probably didn't know how long it would take to come out.
When it's a smaller production like that, you're not dealing with Disney. You're not dealing with Marvel Studios or DC Comics or something like that, or James Gunn or.
How do they advertise for a smaller film like that?
So a lot of times they'll do short film circuits, your South by Southwest and things like that, and just get names and notoriety out there. But Rosenbaum had such following from Smallville.
He was already in, bro.
Yeah, he was in, and he was the producer, he was the writer, he was the director, and he was the star of the movie.
What's he did since then? What was career?
Like? He had a TV show called Imposter where he faked being a pastor, and it was very good.
Like Imposter, but Imposter.
And his most successful thing has been his podcast, which is Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum, and it's a mental health podcast, and he gets a lot of actors and stars on there. And then they recently started the rewatch podcast of Smallville called Talkville, and it's him and Tom Welling, the guy that played Clark Kent. they have guest stars and stuff on there. It's pretty. He's nice. Still in the world. He still lives in L.A. He's doing well.
So, I might be. How long is EXP?
Yeah.
How long has it been in Bowling Green?
Not long. EXP, like most things in Kentucky's not the Midwest, but we kind of are when it comes to technology and things. EXP's been global. It started on the West Coast and East Coast and just kind of works its way in. You know, those major cities always get things first. So Bowling Green, I've been with EXP since 2020, 2021.
I gotcha.
And I was, there were a couple others that went over before me, but Kent had really urged me to do it and went out on a limb and did it and love every minute of it. It's fun. It's different. It's fast paced still.
Mm-hmm. What's the common misconception in the real estate world?
A common one or like the most, I don't know. Anybody could do it. I'm not saying that I'm somebody special, but you can go months without a paycheck. Mm-hmm. You know, it's anything with sales. If you're full commission, I mean, it's sales. It's grinding sales.
What advice would you give somebody that wants to get in to real estate?
Find somebody that knows what they're doing.
And don't quit your day job, right?
I don't know. I think you dive in head first in the shallow end, because the minute that you commit fully to it is the minute that you're going to find the success in it. If you're part-time something, I mean, I'm not saying you can't do part-time, maybe marry it a little bit, but when you feel ready, you need to make the jump, because you want to have a conversation right then and there, and you got to meet people where they are, otherwise they're going on to the next.
What's the latest you've showed the house?
The latest? Mm-hmm. Like time-wise? Yeah. Oh, I've shown houses at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah. So it's constantly on call then, right?
Yeah. And I've had people text me as early as 4 a.m.
Yeah.
They were nurses. I'm not going to blame them, but I had to tell them, text me at 7. Mm. I'm not responding until 7. You know, and I still, if I know you.
Yeah.
I'm up at 5. I'll text you, but don't make it a habit. Nobody wants that habit.
So you said you're up at 5. That brings me to another question I want to ask.
Morning routine.
Yeah.
I know you're a routine guy. I mean, what do y'all do? What's your morning routine? And then I'll fill in the blanks.
Oh.
Are you morning people?
Well. Yeah,
which I'd be good. I get up like, I try. My goal is to get up by 4:30 every day.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah. I was trying the whole 5 a.m., 5:30 a.m., but it's just not in me, man. Like. You know, kid goes to school, so I usually get up by 6 and get him up.
You're still only an hour behind. Yeah.
But, you know.
I'm up at 5. My routine has kind of changed for 2024. I'm trying to do a little more reading.
Yeah.
I'm trying to.
Man, once you get, because I used to be like a last minute dude. I would sleep until I had to get up. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know how people do it.
Once you can, like, get up, like, that's almost, like, it's the most intimate time of the day for me, you know what I'm saying? Because nobody else is awake. I'm by myself.
Yeah,
you know
right.
What I'm saying? So
I get a lot done. I get up at 5. I try and read. I'm reading The Five Rings right now by Miyamoto Musashi. Try and read a little bit at a time. I'm not the type of guy that's going to read 100 pages a day. It's just not what I'm going to do. But I'm going to take excerpts or whatever.
I try to read about 10, 15.
I can do that. Yes. And I think with books like The Five Rings, you can take a lot away in 10 minutes or 10 pages. Mm-hmm. Then I'll do journaling. I try. And I know you and I have talked. I have an app on my computer called Stoic, and it's a journaling app. I try and journal. I can't handwrite my journals. It's not for me. It's just not something I'm going to do.
I'm opposite with you on that.
You want to write them, handwrite them? I type them.
It's so much. Yeah, it's not as intimate to still his work if I'm doing it on a phone or a computer.
I can't do it on the phone. Yeah. The phone feels like I'm cheating the system. But
you know that cramp.
Yeah.
My
wife takes the kid. She goes to work, takes the kid, and then by the time they leave, I'm heading to the gym. And I do the gym Monday through Friday, at least 45 minutes of working out, and then I try and sauna. I know we were talking about that, too. I'm a firm believer in the sauna.
What about cold plunge?
Never done it. You got a hard pass coming from me, man.
I mean, I'm struggling with it. I'm trying to get a routine down on it. So, but I mean, just make yourself do it every day. You got to, you know.
I would rather just do the cold shower for 30 seconds than that cold plunge.
Actually, but to me, I think the getting down in the water is a little bit, I don't know, I'm thinking if I'm standing there and something's just hitting me, you know what I mean?
I like it. I did both.
Which one do you think's harder?
I can definitely stand the cold shower longer.
Yeah.
And after a few days, they become enjoyable. I had to do the cold plunge enough to really give it enough.
I just don't.
But you know, you can't really cold plunge unless you tell somebody about it, right?
Is that what they said?
It's got to be videotaped too, right?
I just can't do it, man. There's no level of this is so good for you that's gonna make me.
It does refresh you though, man. Like
I get that feeling out of the sauna though.
But yeah. If you alternate them though, that's like the ultimate hack.
Is it? Yeah. Well, maybe I'll try that. Yeah. I don't have anywhere to do a cold plunge.
Men's Health. It's right by Chase Bank now.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've got a recovery room that's got an infrared sauna and a cold plunge right there together.
I mean,
the rush is to me is kind of the best thing part of it. It's a hell of a rush.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because you get your adrenaline. There's a dopamine hit that really ain't going to get nowhere else.
Well, and that's another thing about morning routines is that I read and listen to a lot of Andrew Huberman and all that kind of stuff. So you prolong the dopamine hits, no cell phones. I guess I'm cheating by using the computer to write my stoic app.
No screens.
And then I don't do coffee or caffeine until I get back from the gym. So before I go to the gym, I don't use pre-workout anymore. I don't like the jittery feeling, but I'll take like a greens powder. I think that's plenty of energy for me.
Yeah.
And I go to the gym, do my thing, come back. That's when I have my coffee. And I try and prolong it for as long as I can.
Yeah.
By then, I probably get home about 8:15, depending.
Coffee. Then it's work time.
Yeah. Then it's get after it as best you can. Or do the laundry. Walk the dog.
Yeah, right. So you get like, I mean, for real, getting up early, man, sometimes you get like a whole half day ahead of most people because, like, if you've done all of that by 8:15, 8:30, you know, some people ain't even up yet. You already got, you crush the day, as one of my mentors likes to say, before the day crushes you.
Yeah, I think that's hard. Or eat the frog, the things you don't want to do. Yeah, that's a great one, too. It's doing the hard things that if you get them out early enough, you get the rest of the day. I also think health-wise, you know, if I'm up at 5 and already getting steps in and already at the gym, I've burned enough calories and I try and fast until about noon.
Intermittent
fasting. And then I've put off enough time to where I can eat what I want to eat to a certain extent. Now I try and do, what they call God made foods, single ingredient foods. I'm not saying I do it every single time. There are plenty of times when I fail. Don't get me wrong. I ate a pizza this past weekend, and it was the greatest thing ever. Greatest thing ever. I bet you I have a pizza on Super Bowl Sunday.
Well, yeah, and you probably
enjoy it.
Get more of it. You know, like, you probably enjoy it more.
Because you're waiting.
Yeah.
But I try and do the God-made foods or the single ingredient foods. So, like, a piece of salmon, a avocado, a jalapeno.
How can the salmon be prepared, like?
So I'm a big cooking guy too. I love cooking. It's one of my favorite things to do, but I usually pan sear mine.
Yeah.
You can bake it. You can air fry. I've heard a lot of people doing the air fried salmon.
As far as the seasonings go though, like what are you?
I just have a seasoning blend that I prefer. So I use that.
So the God made food, you can pretty much season it how you want.
Yeah. So I'm not going out and using like super sugary barbecue sauces or anything like that, but seasoning blend of, you know, natural ingredients, salt, pepper, garlic powder. Powder is just garlic.
Yeah.
And those kinds of things, you could use that. You could do that and feel good about it. And try and find something that's as low or zero calories as you can find. I try not to waste calories either on stupid things.
Or drinks. Drinking calories is a big no-no from what I've heard.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to lie. if I make my coffee in the morning, I'm probably going to put a little bit of creamer in it.
Oh, for sure.
Now, I like my coffee go-to drink at Q is the iced Americano, which is zero. It's just three shots of espresso over ice with water. That's it.
I might try it sometime. Hey, whatever happened to that little group you was trying to get going? Did y'all ever meet up?
Or? We're
going to
try. Oh, okay. It's just there's been so much hectic nonsense with everything going on, you know. Now trying to expand my real estate reach. I don't know how soon I can commit to it, but I'd like to.
Right. I just thought about it and was, forgot we was even on a podcast, but I was just like, hey, man, what happened to that?
Yeah, that's right. We're on camera right now.
Thanks. So that brings me to another topic. I know you got a lot going on, man, but what about this newsletter thing that you've been doing recently?
Wake Up Bowling Green?
Yeah.
So Wake Up Bowling Green started years ago with a buddy of mine, Chelsea. And we worked together at the time doing real estate, and we just wanted an outreach that wasn't so in your face asking for business. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important in any kind of sales position. Not every conversation has to be, do you want to buy? Do you want to sell? No, it doesn't have to be that. The mentor and coach that I've got, he's got four rules, and it's people got to know you, like you, trust you, and be aware of what you do. And if you can get all those four things down, the other things will come in place. You just have to get them to know you, like you, trust you, and be aware of what you do.
I've been practicing and preaching that for the last couple of years myself.
So Wake Up Bowling Green is just, it's a resource to give people an idea of what's going on in the community. Mm-hmm. It makes me look like an expert on the community.
Add value.
Mm-hmm. And then it could potentially generate a conversation. And that's all it's for. Nowhere in there do I ask, I don't promote listings. I don't tell you the last sale I've had. I don't ask you if you want to look at this.
What is it for somebody that's...
It's just a newsletter. It's basically like Spotted in Bowling Green, but it's about events and things going on. WKU games. I highlight local businesses. I try to highlight like two restaurants and a thing to do on the weekend, and then the highlights for the restaurant. I pick like what I would order if I went out.
Somebody could stay in the loop by just following that newsletter. You know,
yeah.
Like, what's going on?
That's kind of the game plan.
And for the record, that's exactly why I started Spotted in Bowling Green. The exact
same just got thing. Away from that.
All I can trust, yeah. But
Spotted's a little. It's not that though. It's now merged into. All conversation driven.
I'm scared to post in there myself anymore.
I don't blame you, dude.
They come after me. But for sure, I've seen what you did with it.
What have you learned from Spotted in Bowling Green over the past year?
Park downtown.
What have you learned about people?
Oh, man.
People be crazy. People do people and things, dude.
Yeah.
And why is the internet so toxic?
Because people can say whatever they want, and they can, you know, hide. One thing I have learned is, like, I speak sarcasm, like, fluently. Not everybody does. A lot of shit goes straight over their heads, and it, you know.
Let me just say, people don't get hit in the mouth enough. And, I mean, honestly, there's probably things that I've said that I deserve to get hit in the mouth for. I'm not going to act like I'm perfect. But, dude, I mean, the comfort of these keyboard warriors that can just sit behind a keyboard, say whatever they want. They have the fake profile pic.
And do you think most people, like, so me, but in context, when I see somebody doing that, like, they're not validated to me. Like, I understand the context of, man, you're saying that behind a keyboard. Like, so.
Especially with the fake profile.
It's hard for me to. So, I don't take it serious, but some people will read those comments and they'll be ready to just, you know, explode.
Well, we're also in a society now where everybody's just so.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking for a problem. We're looking for solutions to problems that aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the society that we've got.
Different dopamine hits, which we saw earlier.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it is that, you know.
So while we're right there, I feel like You mentioned it earlier. Explain what stoicism is to someone that doesn't know.
Don't get me describing it. You probably are more well-versed than I am. But stoicism to me, I guess, to each his own on definitions, right? If you're going to define something, define it for yourself.
That's what, yeah, to you. That's what.
So stoicism for me is the art of the internal conversation that goes on that your mental ability, I don't know.
To me, it's like if somebody's stoic, they're in complete control of their emotions, their self, their mind.
Yeah, but that's why I was saying it's the art of doing it, because not everybody can do it, but it can be learned. I've learned it very well over the past months or so, is trying to have more control emotionally, mentally, physically. And if you can control, if you can understand that these things are out of my control, all I control is what I do.
And that doesn't, it's not lack of emotions, right? Because
it's internalizing them and feeling them for what they are.
Sitting in those emotions.
Yeah, and you know, somebody makes you mad, it's like, don't jump to it immediately. Sit on it. Think about it. Don't stew on it.
Right.
Internalize it.
Figure out why you feel that way.
And figure out why they feel that way. Mm-hmm. I think that's another part of it. Maybe they're saying this because, you know, their cat died this morning. They're pissed off at me because they got a traffic ticket. They got picked up by Bowling Green Towing or whatever. And it's like, I can't control that. But what I can control is how I react to their reaction. Mm-hmm. That, for me, is stoicism, is the art of controlling your inner dialogue, your inner peace.
I mean, if I had to sum it up, it would just be, you know, never get too high, never get too low.
That's great. Yeah. That's simple. But I think there are moments where you can really get high and really get low, and those feelings are so validated.
Yeah, you're good to, yeah, so to me, that's like, you're going to feel it, but you don't have to act on it. You know, you can be cool, calm, collective. I could be the happiest man alive, or I could be the saddest man in the room, but you really would never know the difference.
Correct.
You
know? Mm-hmm. But there are times when, you know, when you're overjoyed or seriously clinically depressed. And those feelings are very valid and very real, too.
Yeah.
But it's on you to internalize them and feel them for what they are and understand, back to it, this is a chapter.
So stoicism is a lost art, then, especially among Western males right now, would you say?
The Western society, I don't think male, female, I don't think it discriminates. I think it's a thing that is just lost.
I think it's kind of made an emergence, though. Like, there's a lot of people that, you know, are talking about it.
Well, we've identified that it's something that needs to be worked on. So yeah. We kind of are trying to.
We've identified that there's value in it. I don't know that there's enough people that are working on it. It will take off when it takes off. And everything comes back, you know. Mm. I mean, there was a time when people were. They call them the mom jeans, and then it was the skinny jeans, and now mom jeans are back. You know what I mean? Everything comes back, and stoicism has probably ran its course for not being present, and now it's like, wait, these are values that are very much important to everyday life.
Absolutely.
And that's another thing. It's like, you can use these things in everyday life easily. It's something that it does, like I said, it does not discriminate. That's a fact.
No. I agree 100%. Well, man, I tell you what, man. You definitely got some crazy stories.
Yeah.
And I know we could probably sit here and talk for hours and hours on all of that. And we're going to invite you back for a round two at some point.
Follow me.
But at some point, we got to land this plane, because I know everybody's attention span is kind of low. we're already Joe Rogan-ish on here, so... we do got some questions that we always like to kind of try to ask.
Okay.
Here, and we might have already covered some of them, but one thing that we always ask here is, you know, it's wise words. So do you have any favorite quote that, you know, you kind of carry with you day to day?
Stuart Kirby, work smart, not hard.
Gotcha.
Robert Bowden, he owned Spartan Garage here. Mm-hmm. All gas, no brakes.
Oh, yeah, I like that one.
And then for, I guess... My grandfather, the day he passed away, he sat and told me, he said, slow down. You know, my dad told me a long time ago, he wrote it for me, I guess when I turned 18, or it may have been when I graduated high school. When I was playing basketball, he said, you always shoot better when you're on the move. Mm. So I just kind of take those things and manipulate them to however it fits the scenario.
So with the three of those, I mean, all gas and no brakes and slow down and only you shoot better when you move. A little contradictive there maybe, but like maybe.
Kind of. I think what my grandfather meant more than physically slow down, it meant, he said things come naturally to you. So slow down, internalize them, act accordingly. So that's kind of what I figured. And so I merged that with, like my dad said, you shoot better when you're on the move. It's like, take your time, pick your spots. That's slow down. Shoot better when you're on the move is find your spot, get there before somebody else, make it happen. And so I just kind of merged all those things.
I love it. You got a favorite book or books?
It does. I mean, you look at nonfiction or fiction.
Give us one of both.
I think my favorite book would be To Kill a Mockingbird. And I think everybody knows why. It's just a timeless story, doing the right thing, being the stand-up person, trying your best to defend the little guy, and then also looking out for you and yours at the same time. And I would say maybe like a business or literature book. Oh, man. Seven Habits.
Cozy? Okay.
I guess. I don't know. I think there's things that I would take away from so many business books or educational literature.
Personal development.
Yeah, I don't know that I could pick one. I think I would take excerpts from a lot of that. I really like the Five Rings.
Gotcha.
I'm really doing
I feel like my favorite personal development book is always the last one I read.
Ain't that true? Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Because then you're focused on using those things that you're learning at the time.
Gotcha.
That's a good point.
Well, I got a question I don't normally ask, but I think for you it would make sense. Who is, like, the coolest person that you've ever met? Like,
I mean, Rosenbaum comes to mind.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I would say my grandfather is the coolest person I've ever met. I mean, his stories are even nuttier than mine.
He's still alive?
He passed away a couple years back, and it was the hardest thing I've ever gone through. But, man, when I tell you I was blessed being adopted and getting the family that I got, I could not have asked for better when it comes to grandparents. You couldn't have been born into a better family. And he was just the absolute best. He's the coolest person. If I could pick anybody, I'd have him back.
What did he do?
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Exactly what I was right.
Yep. That's exactly how I would describe him. He was a husband, a father, and a grandfather. And I think that sums him up perfectly. A brother. He's the youngest of so many kids. His name was Baby for years because they had so many kids. They probably didn't even know he was running around.
I just called him a baby, huh?
But he was a husband, father, and grandfather. And that was his role. And he filled it perfectly.
Sounds like an awesome man.
Yep. Yep.
You got anything? I mean, we're going to do the rapid fire in a second.
Well, I got some rapid fire for him.
Okay.
All right, well, let's go ahead and roll into that. We do a fun little section. It's rapid fire, so it's just quick questions or quick answers. We're going to alternate questions. You shoot off the hip what comes to you first.
Okay.
Best pizza joint in Bowling Green.
I feel terrible for saying this, but I think I'm going to go Jets. Okay. And I know it's a franchise, but my wife, it's her favorite pizza, and it's just what we love. MJ. And they have the best ranch.
MJ or LeBron?
It's MJ, and it's never going to be LeBron. The fact that Kobe's not in the conversation makes me sick.
Favorite sport to watch?
College football now.
Okay.
Favorite thing to cook?
My daughter would say salmon and avocado. But I like making lasagna. I like anything that takes a lot of time. Beef Wellington, something like that, something artistic.
Horror or comedy?
I think there's time and place for both, and I have passions for both. I would love to do a horror movie or a horror stage production. I've done plenty of comedy. I would love to do something horror related. It would be my dream.
Favorite horror movie?
Halloween. And I do believe that Jaws is up there. Most people don't call it a horror movie.
Hit them with the T-shirt question.
Which one is that?
Okay.
Is it okay to like the original Halloween and Rob Zombie's Halloween?
For me, it's the original Halloween, and Rob Zombie's is just another thing that exists in America or in the world.
So you're not digging Rob Zombie's Halloween? Mm-hmm. Why?
It's probably the nostalgia of the original. Yeah. It probably is. I bet if I watched the Rob Zombie one first, I may feel differently.
Who do you think the greatest band is of all time?
Greatest band?
Yeah.
For me, it would be Chicago or the Eagles. That's what I was raised on. But if greatest performer, it's Michael Jackson. And it's not even close. Right. It's not even close.
What's your favorite movie?
Big Fish is up there.
I mean, you know my little cousins in that.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding?
Yeah, Grayson Stone. Yeah.
Yeah, Big Fish is up there for me.
He's Ian, was it Ian McGregor?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's him as a little kid or whatever.
Yeah, that's the Big Fish reminds me of my grandfather and me.
That's crazy.
Yep.
That's a small world, too, that you would even say that, you know, Big Fish. Because I'm over here like, man, I don't never really tell nobody that because most of the time if I ask somebody they've ever watched Big Fish, I don't even know if they'll tell me that they have or not.
Right. Oh, I love it, dude. It reminds me of my grandfather and the stories that he would tell me. We would sit in his chair, look out the window, and he called like the magic window, and he would talk about dragons in the yard and stuff like that. In the musical production, there's a whole number called Fight the Dragons.
Yeah.
And it's about the dad at the time fighting dragons, but at the very end of the song, he tells his son, it's your turn to fight the dragons. And that's how I remember my granddad. My turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go to Sushiro.
Oh, man, I've changed to Nigerian sashimi. I wouldn't get a sushi roll anymore. I mean, I like the Philly roll because of the cream cheese, but that's not very good for you, but the sashimi. So I am huge on the red snapper, the flounder, and salmon.
Do you ever eat yukis over here?
Yeah, that's what changed me to sashimi.
Oh, I love yukis, man.
Yep, that's why I don't get sushi rolls anymore.
Right.
Okay, interesting. Well, you talked about the working the Shogun earlier, so that's where I was drawing the question.
Yeah.
You got any more?
Give me something.
I've asked him the last three. What you got?
Spencer, what you got?
Oh, I'm not prepared.
you got me, man. I don't know. I ran out of questions.
I'm good.
Okay. What do you got? What's next for you, man? What do you got in the works?
Building my own real estate thing. I don't know when this is going to come out. It may already be built, but I'm going to throw my hat in as a real estate team leader and coach, CEO of a company or my real estate team. And I'm going to give back to people the way that I was taught, the way that I was helped.
Gotcha.
And that's my goal. That's my passion.
Give back and teach them just like you
did. I had a lot of people that did it for me. So.
Awesome. Well, let me know if they need any more.
Hell yeah.
I got plug in.
I know, that's right.
Yeah, man. So where can people find you, man?
Facebook, Instagram, Jonathan Stone, EXP. If you search Jonathan Stone, you'll probably see my little crazy mug pop up. If you're on Spotted in Bowling Green, you can even find me through Wake Up BG, which is the newsletter that I post. And just communicate with me on there. All my numbers and my
social. How do I subscribe to that?
You don't. I post it on Wake Up. I post Wake Up BG on Spotted on my page, and then I email it out to all of my clients.
Okay. We should set you up a funnel where you can get the emails for the newsletter.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that off.
Okay.
Yeah. Man, I appreciate you coming through.
Dude, it's been a blast.
Yes, sir.
Y'all are awesome.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we'll do a round two on this one. I think there's a lot unsaid, so
yeah,
we'll check back with you.
We need to do some comedic stuff next time.
Yeah, I feel like that's what I was about to say. That's why I asked you about your podcast, because you got a good, you know, like energetic vibe. You know,
It's different.
Cameras and stuff.
It's different. I like talking to people and just having them tell me their stuff. I like learning about other people too.
Yeah, I do too.
That's why we do this.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I feel like everybody's got a story to tell, regardless of who they are. So
yeah,
with this, it kind of gives a platform for everybody to kind of tell their story, and maybe someone will be.
Yeah, that's the thing for this. I feel like when the guests come on, like pretty much give them the stage, let them do them,
You asked if I had any advice for kids, and come back full circle. I've been thinking on that or whatever, and it's just when my daughter was born, I asked my dad, "What advice do you have for me?" And this would probably be the other quote that I would use. And he said, "Just be you. And you're good enough. You're a good man, and you're enough." And that was all I needed to hear.
Yeah.
That was special.
That's the second time I've gotten cold chills when you sit there.
Well, imagine having cold chills when he said it.
Right.